Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. We seek to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safe, healthy, and just society. Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, or LEAD, is a program that was developed several years ago in Seattle, King County. According to the LEAD National Service Bureau, LEAD was the result of an unprecedented collaboration between prosecutors, police, civil rights advocates, public defenders, political leaders, mental health and drug treatment providers, housing providers and other service agencies, and business and neighborhood leaders, working together to find new ways to solve problems for individuals who frequently cycle in and out of the criminal justice system under the familiar approach that relies on arrest, prosecution, and incarceration. Speaking with Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori and Karen Kern, is the Senior Director of Substance Use Disorder Services at Central City Concerns. And we're talking about the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program that's here in Multnomah County. It's the national thing, and we have one of the operating programs. Just to start, for the benefit of the listener, what is Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion about?
Sure, I'll start that off. And then Karen, I'm sure, has a lot more detail to how the program's working. Really, the idea behind this is that we, the local community here in Multnomah County, didn't want to reinvent the wheel. We really try to look around the country at other best practices and see where people are have programs that are successful in helping people in their community. And this was one of those programs we found in King County, just our neighbors right to the north. And the way it works is law enforcement, who are out patrolling the streets of our town on a daily basis, come across people that they see over and over again, the same person. They see Jim on the corner, they see Sally under the bridge, the same folks. And they get to a relationship with them, they get to know them, and they want to be able to offer them something else besides a trip to the jail. And they know that giving somebody a trip to the jail just is going to turn around, they'll be right back out on the street again soon, not actually addressing the reasons that they're in the situations that they're in. So through the LEAD program, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion, law enforcement has another tool. They can ask people if they want to be a part of a program that is administered by Central City Concern where people get the services that they need. They have access to drug and alcohol counseling. They have access to housing. They have access to mental health treatment. They have access to a friend. And that has shown through the other communities where this program exists that it's successful.
Karen, on an operational level, I mean, you administer the program. So what does it look like from the ground, I guess?
Yeah, so there are two ways to get into LEAD. We have the arrest diversion process, which is officers come across somebody that is currently at risk for arrest for possession of controlled substance. And then we also have the social contact or social referral method, where people can refer individuals who are either have been arrested in the past for PCS or are at risk for arrest in the future and are using substances illegally. And so the arrest diversion, how it works is the officers encounter an individual on the street who is in the process of breaking the law with a PCS offense, and they offer the individual the LEAD program. It is a voluntary program and it is a harm reduction program. So the only thing that the individual needs to say if they're interested is, yes, I'm interested. And they contact our screening and outreach coordinator, who is able to then meet them either on the corner or at the precinct or wherever is comfortable. And they do a warm handoff at that point, officer to case manager. And then the case manager picks it up from there and does a screen, makes sure that the individual is actually interested in the program, explains how it works, and then assigns them to a case manager. And then we do outreach to that person to in the next 30 days or so, continuously until we can find them again and get them assessed to try to figure out what some of the issues they may want to work on are. And then it's really up to that individual to put together a plan. It's a self-directed plan. So instead of many treatment programs where somebody is, enrolled into a program and prescribed a treatment plan, this program is truly harm reduction, and all we ask is that they complete the assessment and then continue to work with us. And then they get to set the plan goals themselves.
I'm a data guy, so do you have some, the program's been in operation for about a year now, so I guess, roughly. I mean, it was, we spoke about it back in March of 2017, and it was just about to get underway. So you've had at least several months. What kind of numbers are you looking at? How many folks were involved in the program? How many contacts?
Absolutely. So we have currently, as of today, 117 clients enrolled in the program. We have, I would say, it's about 48% arrest referrals and 52% social contact referrals. And that number just fluctuates based on who the officers encounter and want to refer in. We have met over a total of over about 2,500 individual needs in the amount of time that we've been running. And we have actually a pretty good track record of meeting needs that were identified by individuals. So, for example, a lot of people that we encounter need physical health needs or medical needs. They haven't been engaged with primary care or enrolled even in primary care, and often have chronic medical conditions that are not being taken care of. So usually that's one of the first needs that they identify as wanting help with. And we're at 93% in assisting people getting their medical needs met. In addition, housing, the majority of the clients in our program are coming to us with chronic homelessness, street homelessness, not just unstably housed. And we have currently 23% of those people in engaged in housing services. We've got multiple people not just housed, but also working in completed treatment programs for substance use disorders, sober. And people who tried different programs in the past and just, nothing really was working for them. So just the approach, I think, of this program, and again, it being a harm reduction approach and really be self-directed by the client, the relationship that's built with the case manager that's not pressured, like you have to do this, really works in our favor in terms of building that engagement and trust. And then people just saying, yeah, I really want help with this. How can you help me?
Social contact referrals,
it's actually about 52% social contact and 48% arrest aversion currently. But that number fluctuates just based on who the officers encounter in the course of their day. We just enrolled in arrest referral today.
So 52%. That was actually one of my questions, because of course the two different routes, the arrest pre-booking is how do we say it? There's still an arrest happening, so they're still making that kind of connection. But the idea of doing the social contact referral leads into another thing, because LEAD National Bureau's document outlining the core principles for policing says that forcing people to rely on arrest as the sole means of referral can be counterproductive and can delay engagement. Officers who become accustomed to using LEAD may eventually come to regard arrest as a strategy of last resort for low-level drug offenses and offenses related to behavioral health conditions and or poverty. I see LEAD as being a positive thing because it may help with a cultural change within law enforcement. So that arrest does become the last resort,
especially when you're dealing with the low-level drug offenses and offenses that relate to behavioral health conditions and that relate to poverty. Could either of you speak to that sort of culture change thing?
Sure, I can start. For me personally, this was one of the reasons that I was interested in the program in the first place. In this particular program, I think that there was a desire when we were first looking at LEAD, a question of whether we needed to have the law enforcement angle. Couldn't we just have caseworkers who are out walking the streets, encountering people and saying, hey, come into this program? But that actually, that's the highlight for me of this program, is it gives law enforcement an additional tool that they didn't have before, and it allows them to see success. I recently sat through a operations meeting with caseworkers from Central City, law enforcement, folks from the DA's office, and some of our national partners who were here to look at the program. And listening to the conversation about individuals, they were talking about individual and whether the program would be right for them, whether they should stay in the program. And it was really, I just felt so warmed by the conversation where they were talking about a certain individual, and the officer said, I never thought I would see her clean and sober. I never thought I would see her. I thought I would, next time I would see her, I would, or hear from her, I would find out that she had died. And instead, she's on a totally different path now. And so showing law enforcement that there are harm reduction programs that work, change people's lives, I think it's really, as I said, it's for me the highlight of the program.
Karen?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think that working closely with the officers that have been involved in LEAD, I've heard them say many times that they, like you were talking about having another tool in their toolbox, that they wish that they had a way to divert people into services instead of jail, but that there hasn't been in the past really an easy way to do that. The stories that we hear in those operations team meetings, which meet twice a month, and the officers that are involved come, as well as all the case managers, the DA's office is there, Metro Public Defenders is there, we have community members that come and sit in, Multnomah County mental health and addictions folks. So there's a wide variety and a diversity of sort of multidisciplinary team, if you will. And just hearing the officers talk not only about, wow, I can't believe this person is looking the way they are, or in one case, like, I had to make the block because I couldn't recognize this person because they just look so different. But it also gives them an opportunity to have a different kind of relationship with people. Instead of arresting them, they're actually offering them a different choice. And then because they continue to see people on their beat, that they've referred, and they can see the change, they're having conversations with them that are like, wow, how are you doing? Instead of, what are you doing? And is that what you should be doing? So I think it offers them the opportunity, and for us as partners in this, to really shift the vibe, if you will, of what policing looks like, at least in the Old Town Chinatown area, which is been our catchment area until the expansion, where people in the past have had a lot of mistrust of the officers. There's now a lot of people that are not running when they see them and wanting to say, hey, look what I've been doing these days. And it's a much more of a community feel.
That's Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori and Karen Kern from Central City Concern. We were discussing the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program, which has been operating in Portland for the past year. We'll have more in just a moment. You're listening to Prison Pipeline. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Research published in 2017 in the journal Evaluation and Program Planning found that, quote, LEAD participants had 60% lower odds of arrest during the 6 months subsequent to evaluation entry, and both a 58% lower odds of arrest and 39% lower odds of being charged with a felony over the longer term. These statistically significant differences in arrests and felony charges for LEAD versus control participants indicated positive effects of the LEAD program on recidivism. End quote. There are currently 19 fully operational LEAD programs in jurisdictions around the United States. 6 of those are certified by the LEAD National Service Bureau. Portland's LEAD program is one of those. Let's get back to that discussion about LEAD in Multnomah County with County Chair Deborah Cafori and Karen Kern from Central City Concern. So now you mentioned the expansion. The started Chinatown, you're doing Lloyd Center. Now in May, you announced that there was going to be an expansion in the southeast, northeast, this old industrial corridor around 12th to the river will be included. So how many officers does this thing involve, and what kind of area does it cover now?
It's my understanding that with the expansion, we added 9 new officers to, so now there's a total of 15. And the catchment area has grown. It wasn't our original plan was to do the Lloyd area as well as Old Town Chinatown, but now, as you said, we've expanded. So basically the boundaries move out to southeast and northeast 12th from I-84 to Powell. So it's a big area, this inner East Portland, but we believe that the success that we've had in Old Town Chinatown will be easily replicated over here, and having more officers involved in this program, allowing more people in the community to participate, I see as a real positive.
So resources, I mean, as you're expanding the catchment area, you're getting more people involved in the program, you've got to have more resources being allocated to serve these folks. How's that fight going? What's that looking like?
Well, we had, with the original dollars that we put aside, $750,000, allowed us to serve a certain number of individuals. And we weren't hitting those numbers just with the catchment area being Old Town Chinatown. So we believe that with the expansion, then we'll be able to hit the numbers that are out there for those for the dollars we've already allocated. We have 6 case managers through Central City, and so they can expand their caseloads to add more people.
Yeah, let's get some of the details here. So, what these case managers as a coordinator? What other kind of and what kind of reaction are you getting from businesses as this thing has rolled out? I mean, what are the people out there on the street saying?
Yeah, that's a good question. So we have 6 case managers, 2 bilingual, bicultural, Spanish-speaking case managers, African-American case managers. We try to have a diverse team as well in terms of the background. So we have some peers. We have one CADC, which is a addiction credential person. We've got a couple of people that are currently in an MSW program at PSU. We have other people with mental health backgrounds. So just really trying to have a diverse team to meet the needs of the community. And then we also have a screening and outreach coordinator who is the first contact of clients that are referred to us, who liaisons mostly with the police department as they're making referrals. And as the chair was saying, the expansion on to the east side absolutely allows for more referrals to come in. And we were slow to start, I think. And I think for various reasons. I think people needed to get used to the program. I know that the individuals that we were serving were a little leery at first about, you know, I don't necessarily trust the police, and I don't know what you're talking about, and whatever. And so our team is able to go out into the community while they're looking for their own clients and do outreach as well, just about LEAD and what the program is about. So word is kind of getting out now where people are interested when they do get the opportunity. What was the other question you asked? Oh, the business community. Yeah, actually, we've had a lot of positive response from the business community because we have the social contact way to get in. I receive phone calls periodically from business owners who have individuals camping like outside of their building or in their doorway or next to their building or in their parking lot who are experiencing some kind of sometimes mental health crisis or just distress. They know that they're using drugs or alcohol, and they're looking for a way to, instead of just having them move away, how can I help this person get into services? And so we're able to send the case manager out and engage them and see if they're interested. And then at the operations team, we can get a little bit of information and then determine whether or not this person might be eligible and then get them in that way. So we actually have had a lot of positive response from the business community about the program.
Well, that does beg the question, how do we go about building more public support for the for social services like housing, addiction treatment, mental health services? I mean, that's, as the program expands and, you know, as we look at the numbers in context, we're just catching a drop in the bucket. I mean, we need to be doing this all over the city in a bigger way. How do we build this public support for these services?
I think one of the one of our next steps, and we've started this a little bit, is getting the word out, not just to the people whose lives can be changed by being involved in the program, but getting the word out to the general public. And that's one of the reasons why we were so excited to do this show with you, is talking about it to the public that there are programs out there that are successful, that work. And we've spent the last year, you know, building some data, so we have some results to show. We have some people who have real stories, and that is what's going to be helpful with talking about it, is being able to say to the public, I'd like you to meet this person. A year ago was sleeping under the bridge, and now he's employed at Central City Concern with a job, and he's been clean and sober, and he's living in an apartment. And those are the stories, the success stories that show to the public that this works.
Do you have any closing thoughts for the listener?
Yeah, I think that the beautiful thing about this program is that it expands the options for pathways into recovery for people who are struggling with addiction and mental health issues, just behavioral health in general, as well as homelessness. And I think that to make a dent in serving the population that is struggling, you need to have a diversity of options. And this offers something that's different than anything that's come before it. And it's working. And yes, it might be on a small scale for now, but it has the opportunity to grow. And it is working for people who, like I said before, have tried lots of other different types of ways, whether it be a specialty court or a jail program, or whether it just be a treatment program or whatever it is. So I think that the secret sauce, as they call it in Seattle, is the relationships that we're able to build, not just with the case managers and the clients, but also in partnership with the police bureau, and that together we're coming together as a community to really take care of people and offer them something different in a way that is treating them with dignity and respect, instead of blaming them for the problems that they have.
Great.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's just really interesting is that through the data that Central City has collected, we've seen that the physical health needs were such a high, rose to the top on from our clients' perspective. And I think that was something that I hadn't seen or thought that occur. I thought people would say they need housing, they need, you know, food. You know, I didn't think that their physical health care would be something that they would be asking for. And so that is another really strong outcome from this program that we didn't foresee going into it that needs to be highlighted. I think we've been able to also learn some of the areas in our community that some gaps that we have, and one of them is around culturally specific providers, whether it's providing mental health care or addiction treatment. And while we have, and Central City has done a great job of getting a variety of staff, people with, speaking different languages, culturally specific staff, when they go out to the community to find the services, they're just not there. And so through this program, it's also highlighted some other areas that the county and the community needs to focus on. So there's really just been a lot of good that I believe has come out of this. And I'm looking forward to this next year and getting some more people involved and getting the word out to the general public that we're all in this together. We live in this community together, and putting people in jail for a day or a week is not going to solve the problem. Getting people the help they need, that's going to solve their problems.
Thank you very much. Thank you. That was an interview with Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori and Karen Kern from Central City Concern. We were discussing the Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program that's been in operation in Portland for the last year. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. I'm Doug McVeigh, and you've been listening to Prison Pipeline. Find this and other installments of Prison Pipeline at the KBOO website at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Prison Pipeline has a Facebook page. It's at facebook.com/prisonpipeline. Please give the page a like and share it with friends. We'll be back in a week with another edition of Prison Pipeline. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long!
Don't you know I have faults like anyone? Sometimes I find myself alone regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard.